you guys. It's Andy's Girls. It's a rainy Saturday. You sound like Edgar Allan Galley. It's a rainy Saturday here in, where am I? New York City. And there was a little bit of a scheduling adjustment with an upcoming HE Classic, which you guys will get tomorrow. But I did need to hop on the horn here today with two devastating updates that I just needed to share and talk through with you. Oh, it's episode whatever. Leave me alone. Update number one, and this is, we have to be serious for a second, okay? We have to be serious and contemplative, normalize changing your mind based on new information. I don't know that I want you to potentially change your mind if, in fact, this is a mind change, but I do have really upsetting news for you, which is, and it pains me to say this, it really does deep down in my core. Season two of Buying Beverly Hills, it might be worth a watch. Now, I had no plans to watch. I actually thought of it as lame before Paris Hilton said as much on Instagram. I was not into it. I felt deceived, and somehow that was Netflix's fault instead of Bravo's, that Netflix might potentially get content that, frankly, Bravoholics deserve. And we deserve to get it at our home base. And so I started watching yesterday, Friday, which is when season two came out. I had sort of half watched season one, I think at about 5% attention, which seemed pretty generous at the time. Season two, I had spoken actually with an upcoming AG guest about, like, what is the cheater guide? What's the cheater brand, honestly, to watching only Kyle Mauricio divorce family talking about that content and not anything else? So I was told to watch episode 8, breaking news, episode 10. This is depressing. I think I actually remember the episode title, Mergers and Separations, maybe. And episode 3. Now, I do know, I believe that the season starts, episode 1 does start with some content that's like a little The Way We Were style. So I watched episode 3, and truly, this is a gift for those of you who don't want to watch the full season. I think the Kyle and Mo of it all starts at around the 44-minute mark. Episode 8, I would just fast forward to when the folks are in Aspen, honestly. There's some side conversation between members of Mo's team about the separation announcement coming out. And then 10 obviously covers an awful lot because it's the finale. And what I discovered was, honestly, that, and this was really upsetting to watch, that actually a lot of the questions that I had and really follow-ups that I had for Mauricio were in fact asked, if not answered, on Buying Beverly Hills. And it was sort of frustrating at the same time to realize some of the, like, tertiary characters who I know truly nothing about, I'm actually kind of interested in. So I am making the executive decision, I think today, since it's so rainy out, to maybe watch the entire season 2 on the people's couch, because I actually was into the little that I saw of, like, everybody else in the cast whose last name isn't Umansky. I was actually kind of, I was down to clown a little bit. I was intrigued by some of their weird fighting over, like, a joke or something. I mean, that actually does feel a little bit like Beverly Hills energy, that you're, like, upset at someone else for telling a joke. I mean, that could sustain an entire season, if not a reunion arc. There were a couple things that I found really curious, and I am going to get into this more with said guest on an upcoming AG, but I was genuinely surprised to see, I mean, hashtag representation matters. I was genuinely surprised to see the kids really, to me, holding Mauricio accountable just in asking basic follow-ups of, like, we tried to make it work. How did you try to make it work? Well, you know, we didn't have a lot of time, XYZ. Well, if you've been married for 28 years, wouldn't you think that fighting for your marriage is worth taking the time? I mean, they really kind of got into it with stuff. And while I do constantly confuse Sophia and Alexia's names in my head, Sophia had a lot to say and Farah had a lot to say, especially
in episode 10, just getting to the heart of the matter with, like, obviously we love you, but we need to have a little bit of a talk. And what was so fascinating to me in watching what I watched, which again, this wasn't the full season, but it was, I mean, a couple episodes worth, and I think it's 10 episodes total, was Sophia at one point in conversation with her mom and sisters out to lunch, talking about the fact, and I think she said this in a follow-up too, that the family never really talks about hard conversations. They just don't have it. They kind of have led conversations sort of in the style of how we've seen Mauricio, of like everything is on the up and up or we're just not going to talk about it. And as a result, she had a conversation with my dad, she had a conversation with her dad where she said, essentially in a confessional, I don't know how to talk to him because he won't allow himself to be vulnerable. And I don't connect with like the happy Mauricio of it all, which I thought was an incredibly powerful, honest thing to say that I connected with, not necessarily from my own experience, but just understanding hers, that because her dad didn't let her in on his feelings, including his feelings in real time, and she was feeling differently. She had feelings of upset and some level of obvious pain about what was happening. And because he was not sharing those same vulnerabilities, she couldn't connect with him in that way. And to hear the kids talk more than once about the fact that they didn't know really how to engage in conversation about their parents' separation because their family structure just didn't include having those kinds of difficult conversations just throughout their childhood, seemingly through now, that's got to be a difficult thing to hear. You also see Kyle and Mo talking about the divorce announcement going out. Now, Buying Beverly Hills, you know, said in the lead up to season two that cameras were up when the sort of surprise leak to people went live. And you don't see it like in the moment. It's not, they didn't do some sort of like posed thing, which, you know, BH has done after the fact, but pretending it's in real time with Erica's divorce announcement with the all things Kyle and Mo. So it seemed to be sort of like the day after, I think, when the announcement went out. It wasn't the kids finding out quite literally in real time. And honestly, to be frank, thank God for that. But it was very, very soon after. There's actually a conversation, a dinner conversation, where the family seemingly for the first time is getting to the heart of the matter of like what this separation potentially means. And Kyle says, you know, I actually have to go back. They're in Aspen. And Kyle says, I have to go back to LA to film. And the kids are like, film what? And she said, well, cameras are going back up since the announcement went out. So I have to, you know, go back and film. And it's in those moments where I realized that Buying Beverly Hills really, truly was there, at least in the immediate days following, in a way that felt much more organic and honest than what we saw on Beverly Hills. Even when you think of that family conversation that Kyle and Mo had on camera on BH, and frankly, some prior scenes of like Mauricio making the same joke on, it turns out on Beverly Hills that he was also making on Buying Beverly Hills, of like, oh, thank God it's you having the affair now and not me anymore. You just kind of realize that some of this happened for the first time and some of it is a copycat. It's hard to figure out which is which, but it seems really apparent just by the filming timing for Buying BH that the conversations that they had as a family were certainly filmed before the one that we saw on Beverly Hills. And it also is a little confusing because Kyle and Mo are in, like, engaged in these, you know, this like heart to heart with their kids. Kyle obviously has an understanding of what the kids are talking about with their dad when she's not there. And then we have Kyle talking on Beverly Hills, meaning Housewives, about not wanting to discuss any of this because she needs to protect her kids. Now, some of that is specific, just to be clear, about when did you lose trust? And I think some of our perception that like Mo fucked up, and by that I mean like fucking somebody else. But some of this is just related to like, you're not allowed to talk about the idea of a potential split or separation at all. And while, to my understanding, the bulk of like, you know, the dinner party from hell, all of that happened before Buying Beverly Hills was filming, to my understanding. But then there are other aspects of this, like, for example, Kyle filming the reunion where she doesn't want to talk about anything, where it becomes difficult to be a Bravo viewer, let alone a Bravoholic, watching Buying Beverly Hills, because I realize that she's actually engaged in open and honest conversation on this other show at moments that were filmed well before the reunion was filmed. So it's like a little bit of a reverse stopgap of like Kyle going on Housewives on the reunion and saying we cannot talk about this, or not sharing a lot of details, or Andy, really a lot of this is like the Andy production of it all, Andy not asking any follow-ups. And then after the fact, we're watching Buying Beverly Hills season two, and it's like, okay, follow-ups are happening, questions are being asked, and it feels like more information, let alone honest information, is being shared. And I was posting a little bit while I was watching and just kind of sharing my reaction, and just a sense of definitely a level of frustration about what we did not have access to, and the reasons we were told we didn't have access to it, just when it came to like basic vulnerabilities and maybe a little bit of attention with the group, and then realizing what was actually filmed. And I think that there are a couple reasons for that, but the one that I kind of focused on was thinking about just the family equity when it comes to Housewives. Now, I know, because I have gotten a lot of DMs from people who are like, it's about the money. They're making more money on Netflix than they're probably making on BH. And I don't know any of the, you know, math is math. And I don't know any of the details of their agreement or contract, frankly, with either show. But I actually didn't think it was financial in terms of like how you think about control on these shows. Obviously, Kyle has a lot of power in terms of her time as a housewife being an OG for 13 seasons. Like, we can't discount that, or at least I refuse to. There are certain housewives who have the ability to potentially influence the ways that, you know, they're maybe criticized at a reunion or something else, just in terms of like the nature of their role on the show. I think they're thought of in some ways, and it's a very small group, of being needed. So when you think of how like Andy came at Jen Aiden for talking about her insistence that she believed that her family had a right to privacy, or that she didn't need to share private information about her marriage with her kids before joining reality TV, Andy is going to have a different response with Jen, who has a different level of power and history with the Housewives universe than he did with Kyle. And a part of that is a criticism in my mind, but another part of that is just understanding the reality that some housewives have more power and sway than others. It's just how this universe, like many universes, work. And then I think about the ways that Buying Beverly Hills is structured on Housewives. Beverly Hills, it's so confusing to say Beverly Hills and Beverly Hills. The way that Housewives is structured, sure, there are some kids who grow up and become more integral to cast dynamics than they were before. I think of Brianna as an adult with Vicky, certainly during the Brooks era and beyond. So, absolutely prior. And I think of Gia and Teresa, the way that she has grown up, is now getting her own confessionals, is now participating in conversations in a way that she didn't, and frankly couldn't, shouldn't, when she was younger. And with the kids, Kyle and Mo's kids are central characters, or at least being positioned in that way, on Buying Beverly Hills. There is, to me, a sense of interest from the perspective, I mean, if you're going to talk about the agency being a family business, so too is buying Beverly Hills much more than Housewives of Beverly Hills. Like, the kids have a vested interest in ensuring that buying Beverly Hills, I think, moves forward is engaging. It doesn't mean that I'm saying like, oh, they're thinking about, you know, talking about their parent separation because this is the place to do it because this will help their careers. I'm not thinking that at all. I'm just thinking in terms of the structure and strategy of the show on Netflix. The kids are actual characters in a way that they aren't on Housewives. On Housewives, we're hearing about their experience, but it's still through Kyle's lens. On Netflix, we are being told through the structure of the show that this is more of a dynamic in which they are in control. They also seem to be more comfortable on that show. They come in as adults, young adults, certainly, which also seems to have some impact and some like generational divide between members, between Mo and Kyle's kids and members of the agency staff and potential leadership. There is some tension there, which is also interesting, like the nepotism of it all. And I think there is a certain level of care in how the kids are reflected and shown on the show too. I mean, there's a nepotism in the edit, obviously. And in addition to that, I think that there is just a different way that the kids are used on this show, because I'm calling them kids. That's the way I will always think of them. But they are looked at, obviously, as Mauricio's kids learning the ropes at this like booming place of work. But in addition to that, they have their own voices and they are able to kind of stand in them. And so as a result, they're going to have more say. They're going to have more say in what's going on in the agency, potentially, in the episodes, potentially, and certainly in talking about their parents, you know, splitting up. And so that to me is really meaningful and really vulnerable. And to think a little bit more about what Andy said to Jen Aiden on Jersey or yonder in Franklin Lakes, you know, that whole expectation of privacy. Why would you think that you can go on reality TV and still have secrets? It did make me feel a certain way in watching Kyle and Mauricio grapple with the fact that this announcement went out. It was like leaked from someone to people.com. I do believe it went out without either of their knowledge. I just believe that because that's my opinion. And also in watching their reactions to the leak on Buying Beverly Hills, there does appear to be genuine upset because their kids weren't told the entire truth about the separation. And I think about Kyle saying on Housewives, the fact that she didn't want to discuss certain things well before the announcement was made public because she didn't want the kids to be aware. She didn't want the kids maybe to overhear if they were filming something between Kyle and Mauricio at their house, that the kids weren't being told exactly what was going on in their marriage, that it appeared to be a very, very slow boil. And my guess is if you asked Kyle and Mauricio now how they would have behaved seeing the way that this announcement affected their kids. Obviously, I think Farrah knew that there was stuff going on. She's older than her sisters, but no one knew definitively that their parents were getting separated. And I just think you're filming one reality TV show. Now you're filming a second. This is easy for me to say. I'm not in their situation. I do think, I mean, LOL, normalize changing your mind based on new information. I do think that Kyle and Mauricio would have behaved differently knowing the impact of what happened with the leak. But I do think that if you are in a dynamic with your relationship and you know that you are separating, I mean, they knew that they were separating well before telling your kids. I think you have to have that conversation with your children before cameras go up. I don't think you can play house while filming two reality TV shows trying to say that everything is okay or it's not okay, but we're working on it, when you know that you are leading to a separation. I think it's different if they really, really didn't know that they were going to be separating and there were no major changes made. And then someone leaked information that was maybe a hypothesis more than anything else. And that leads to, you know, Kyle and Mauricio looking at each other, like blinking and being like, okay, what do we do next? This is not that situation. This is seems to be two people who were both aware that they were separating and were frankly separated. And so to have that dynamic play out on camera, but not tell your kids, it does feel like there's a certain level of denial that's existed in their family structure that they were kind of depending on. And who doesn't live with that to a certain extent? Like this just kind of suspended reality. It doesn't necessarily work IRL for those of us who don't have a TV show, but it definitely won't work when you're filming reality TV, because that suspended reality, when put in front of reality TV cameras, the edit is not going to be great. And you're just opening yourselves and your lives up because we're pretending that they're private figures, but they're not. Like the structure of Bravo changes. What we're watching on Vanderpump Rules right now is more of an introduction into like entirely breaking the fourth wall when it comes to discussing the reunion, when it comes to discussing the show, because this season of Vanderpump Rules is about the cast reacting to the Scandoval, which was this like global, wild media frenzy that took place for several months. And now we're watching the cast react to that and react to each other reacting to that. Housewives gets a little tough. I mean, we saw recently on Potomac, Mia talking about the reasons that NECA wasn't going to be asked to be a part of the photo shoot. And then it's like a looped over line of her saying, you know, because we're on the Real Housewives of Potomac and essentially she's new to the cast. That was to me a little bit of a surprise to hear her directly reference. It's like speaking in third person, directly referencing the name of the show while filming a confessional, because we're all supposed to believe to a certain extent that this is about a friend circle. This is about a circle of friends. So what does it mean if the circle of friends is viewed outside of that? Like when we insert into that sentence a circle of friends on a very, very specific reality TV universe, like what does that mean if we are including the reality of this being reality TV? And I think Bravo plays with that of how to break the fourth wall and try to do so judiciously. Sometimes they don't have a choice but to break the fourth wall if there are people fighting about the radar online or gossip that they've heard or blogs or whatever else. And the structure is, I think, constantly changing and has to be somewhat flexible to that of being judicious of like when you specifically quite literally reference the name of the show, reference the fact that these are celebrities at this point. They have their own name. They are Bravo Lebs. And so introducing that into all of this while trying to maintain some sense of normality is tough. But I think with Kyle and Mauricio, a sense of denial can only exist for so long when you both know that you are highly, highly public individuals whose marriage and relationship is always, always going to be scrutinized, because that's always going to be a part of the plot. They just had the benefit of a better edit. And maybe that's from the realities of their marriage and how they felt about each other for several years, plus the way the audience viewed them and viewed their love. And this is kind of the effect of what happens when you go in with a certain level of denial, but also refusal to accept the reality that you are not, that you have the right to privacy and that privacy is always going to be maintained. Or maybe it's just the denial of two people struggling who don't want to tell their kids that their marriage is in trouble and don't want to put that final button on it and are pushing it as much as they possibly can. I think that it is very apparent that that was a very big mistake. And I hope that that, you know, looking back, they, I'm sure that they do. I think we frankly see examples of it again on Buying Beverly Hills, that there's an understanding that they, I think, genuinely fucked up by not telling their kids before cameras went up, because it was always going to lead to this. It's just like you're putting this stuff off, but you're doing it while filming reality TV. It's like we're, you know, leaving out these little breadcrumbs of like things are not great on BH, but on Buying Beverly Hills, it's like it's a much fuller deep dive. So if you feel like you didn't get what you wanted from watching this season of BH and feeling a certain level of upset about how the reunion went, then I gotta say some of that is going to be answered on Netflix. And that fucking sucks. Like, I have to be honest, it sucks. Some of that's a matter of timing, but some of it is just a matter of other stuff. And so it is what it is. If you are a Kyle fan or not, and just want to see more of their dynamics in a way that feels certainly more intense, but also I think more honest, I would watch. I would go to Netflix and give it a goddamn whirl. And I do think I'm going to watch the whole season too, because I was honestly interested in what took place.
Paris is always a good idea. And when I schlep on over to Europe, to my favorite city in the world, I bring with me a few important phrases that I have learned from Housewives. C'est bon, chic c'est la vie. Je m'appelle the Countess, n'est-ce pas, Luann? And while those key phrases are important when speaking to any French bravo-holic, for other matters of life, that's where Rosetta Stone comes in. Rosetta Stone is the trusted expert for 30 years with millions of users and 25 languages offered, including, of course, French. It features fast language acquisition. It immerses you in so many ways. There's no English translations, so you really learn to speak, to listen, and to think in that language. It's an intuitive process. You pick up a language naturally, first with words, then phrases, then sentences. J'adore Chris Manzo. Et toi? There's a speech recognition filter which gives you feedback on your pronunciation. It's convenient with desktop and app options, and it's an amazing value. Rosetta Stone's lifetime membership has all 25 languages for any and all trips and language needs in life. That's lifetime access to all 25 language courses Rosetta Stone offers for 50% off. A steal. Don't put off learning that language. There's no better time than right now to get started. For a very limited time, AGs can get Rosetta Stone's lifetime membership for 50% off. Visit rosettastone.com/today. That's 50% off unlimited access to 25 language courses for the rest of your life. Redeem your 50% off at rosettastone.com/today. Today. Spoiler alert, I watch a lot of Bravo. And when I'm not watching Bravo, I'm sitting in the cloth having a moment of spiritual growth. And when that's not happening, I'm living here in New York where there is a lot to do and not a lot of time to do it. The last thing that I want to be thinking about, let alone worrying about, is my hair. Now, I have wavy hair naturally. It also has color processing, which is surprising because I am a spiritual blonde. And as a result, I don't want to have to worry about frizz. That's why I love Way's anti-frizz cream. It works for my hair texture. It works for having wavy hair. It smells great. There are notes of bergamot, Italian lemon. You guys know I just went to Italy. It was for moments like this, violet and more. Having used a lot of products in my hair in the past, I don't like a heavy feeling, especially when you have wavy hair. That's incredibly important, which is why I love the anti-frizz cream. It makes my hair look like me just a little bit better. Way's new anti-frizz cream provides immediate frizz control that lasts up to 72 hours. It helps reduce and repair split ends,
And according to a consumer perception study, 90% of participants agreed that their hair looks less frizzy. And I would like to know what that consumer perception study has to say about some original cast members of The Real Housewives of New York. You'll be way obsessed with Way's bestsellers. They're leave-in conditioner, detox shampoo, hair oil, gloss, and so much more. Frizz-free up your schedule with Way. Go to theouai.com and enter promo code Andy for 15% off any product. That's theouai.com, promo code Andy. C'est bon, c'est bon.
But speaking of other things taking place, so this is the joy of me thinking I'm going to like hop on a mini episode, because I genuinely think this is going to be 3 minutes long. I don't know why. I'm like, oh, it's just going to be a little hop. I'm just going to say, hi, how's your mom? And then keep it moving. No, this is going to be 18 hours like every other ep. But I do need to discuss another deeply upsetting breaking news announcement that went out last night. I was going for a little stroll in New York because I knew today was going to be a rainy motherfucker, and just kind of got a little text from friend of the pod Pet Shop Boy and lost my goddamn mind. I stopped walking to read the full article and then to look through my album and do a little Google search of the photos that really kind of fit the energy that I had about a devastating, shitty, crass, rude announcement that went out that I think was intended to humiliate the person while also getting a little bit of press attention, which seems to be this guy's new obsession, just kind of proving the point of loving being on camera, proving the point that many of us already knew well. Anyway, a little bit of a breaking news from an exclusive from People.com. People who have sidled up to this guy in such a way, it gives me tabloid energy. I'm like, what happened to People Magazine's astrological sign when it comes to Jonathan Jansen? Like, at what point did we decide that this man, that we were going to be the exclusive space for this man to just go on and on and fucking on? It's like, it gives such extreme clown energy. I feel weird about People when they keep doing these exclusives from John. Is there not a single housewife? Has anyone checked on Gina Keough lately? Like, I'm sure she's up to something good. Like, let's see what she's doing in her life. Why are we giving John Jansen this much space? But here I go, doing it in a slightly different way on Andy's Girls. So the headline breaking news that came out last night, Jonathan Jansen sues ex Shannon Bador for, this is the headline on people.com. So People, I don't think they're a friend of in Shannon's life. It's just so gross. John Jansen sues ex Shannon Bador for $75,000 that she allegedly borrowed for facelift. Exclusive. Bador and Jansen dated for 3.5 years before splitting in January 2023. So I'm just going to do a little reading rainbow of what People has to say. Shannon Storm. Oh, it's actually Storms Bador. Little editor there in the edit. Shannon Storms Bador's relationship with John Jansen is costing her more than just heartache. On Wednesday, The Real Housewives of Orange County star's ex-boyfriend filed a lawsuit in Orange County Superior Court against her for breach or oral contract. Wow, whoever, this is not giving writer girl energy. There's somebody really just cut and pasted from John Jansen's publicist. Against her for breach of oral contract and promissory fraud, among other things, to recover $75,000 he claims she failed to repay him. In the complaint obtained by People, John Jansen's just sliding into everybody's DMs. Jansen, 61, alleges that Bador, 59, but looking 33, turned to him for financial support in early 2022, borrowing $40,000 via wire transfer on January 23, 2022 for a facelift procedure. Why that was necessary to include. Then on May 20, 2023, he gave her another $35,000 via personal check. In both instances, Jansen claims in the docs, Bador agreed to pay back the loan with interest. But despite multiple requests in 2023 and 2024, Jansen claims she has yet to.
Janssen seeking the full amount plus accrued interest costs and reasonable attorney's fees. Reasonable, LOL. It's the first time he's ever used that word in his life. His attorney at Rutten & Tucker LLP, what a guy Edson is, says Ms. Badore's defense that Mr. Janssen paid her $75,000 as a gift is completely meritless, with their emails and text messages will show Mr. Janssen, Mr. Jonathan Janssen, is saddened that Ms. Badore, but again, Miss, really, Mademoiselle, thank you so much, unwillingness to repay the loans made it necessary to file this lawsuit. The piece notes, of course it does, that following their split in November 2022, he's since moved on, finding love with Shannon's now co-star, Alexis Bellino. The two met through mutual friends in November 2023 and began dating that December. How great for them. He also insists at a recent DirecTV Streaming with the Stars viewing party where he and Bellino made their red carpet debut. He says his romance with Alexis is not about fame. As Jonathan Janssen says, I've been accused of wanting to be in front of the camera, but you'll have to watch the show and see if that's true, he told People. So this man is saying, I'm being accused of being a fame whore, and the best way to know if that's true is to give me more fame. I mean, what a fucking piece of shit he is, huh? And that's allegedly. Allegedly, he's a creature from the Blue Lagoon. I mean, I guess orange, which is really the color on Orange County with their chosen fruit. It is in fact a citrus energy. When life gives you 9 lemons in a bowl and you date Don Janssen, you need a bigger bowl. You just need a much bigger bowl. He's the gift that keeps giving. He's proving Shannon right every single fucking day. It's like Brooks Ayers in a better bag. I can't even phrase and form words because I'm so fucking upset. I mean, I think I did say on social when I saw this that he gives me like crusty, scrunchy energy from like Delia's late 90s vibes. Like, he's just the absolute worst man. And to call him a man is generous at best. This is a guy who will do whatever he can to maintain, and again, this is allegedly, on a comedy show, to maintain some sort of energy that feels created not only to give him, this guy who truly needs to get a job, more attention, but also to treat Shannon like a piece of shit. Like, it's extremely gross that People is including the headline that this is all about a facelift, but it's incredibly gross that this guy thought this would be a way to get more attention, would be to reveal the fact that she had plastic surgery and to feel like that is his place to tell us, I guess, on the public flat platform, also known as People Magazine's TMC Life and Style energy. So Shannon did share a response that says, I am shocked and disappointed that John has filed a lawsuit. My attorney has been in constant communication with his counsel. I agreed to pay John what he wanted because I knew that attorney's fees would surpass the amount sought, but more importantly, to eliminate the negative emotional components that come with a lawsuit. It is important that I continue to focus on the positive aspects of my life and move forward. And poor sweet Shan, the positive aspects, obviously, exhibit, you know, 1 through 10, Archie Badore. John declined the offer because he refused to sign a mutual non-disparagement agreement. I was hoping that if I met his baseless demand, we could at least use this as an opportunity to bring complete closure to this chapter in my life. So what I'm getting from this is that Shannon knew this man was coming at her for every last shekel she had, because of whatever agreement that she considered, I think at some point considered to be a gift, and that she said, I will pay you this money because it is a bigger cost to have this become tabloid fodder, which is what it absolutely did become. But she wanted them to sign a mutual non-disparagement agreement, not a one-sided kind of NDA that are often used, that we hear talked about by reality TV stars, sometimes when they're using them against their assistants or something else, where they feel like it's a way for that person they don't want to speak to be forced to shut the fuck up and they will say whatever it is that they want to say. This is a mutual non-disparagement agreement, but he didn't want to do that because the whole purpose of this is to embarrass and humiliate this woman and to frame it around her having a plastic surgery procedure. It's like he's body shaming her, plastic surgery shaming her, trying to humiliate her, and continuing to try to attach himself to her. You would think if this guy is happy in his incredibly odd dynamic with Alexis Bellino, who looks more and more desperate as the days come, you would think that this guy would be happy enough with his new forever, I guess, certainly soon enough wife, that he would leave Shannon alone. And if you wanted the money, if it was about the money and you genuinely believe it was owed to you, she's saying she would have paid it if you just shut the fuck up. I mean, if you didn't try to humiliate and embarrass her. I can't imagine being in Alexis's shoes, thinking that, wow, he's treating this other lady like shit, but he's not going to do that to me. When has that ever worked out? When has a woman in a relationship with a guy who appears to be extremely toxic or at least hyper-focused on his ex, when has that ever worked out where he looks at his current partner of about 36 minutes and says, but I love you differently and it's going to go great? Wouldn't you think that the best evidence of who this man is in front of you online at every moment? Or is attention just the new love? That it doesn't matter. This is helping me maybe in my career by adding more chaos to the mix, which will maybe get bumped up from being a friend of maybe to full time. Who's to say? I mean, the fact that he's doing it while they're filming, all of this is connected to John getting more focus on John and John continuing his relationship to Shannon since he's not with her anymore. And I find myself just incredibly annoyed at it because I think it's super fucking creepy. And I also think, I mean, obviously you guys know I stand for Shan. She is my broken bird queen. But I also think with everything that she's going through because of the dynamics of after her arrest and the DUI and everything else that she's going to be processing on camera, now there's this big fallout with Tamra. And Vicky's not going to be on the show in as big a role as she was even last year, although she is doing some cameo stuff. With Alexis being on and Alexis bringing with her John, I mean, certainly she was in the mix with casting before, but John gave her a huge, huge, huge fucking bump. All of this began with Instagram, with them like posting a photo after seeing each other, probably at The Quiet Woman, and then getting a sense of the reaction to that and seemingly both deciding, yeah, let's go all in. They might love each other, but they certainly love the attention that being with each other has created. The fact that he's still continuing these dynamics because he wants to do them publicly and on a public platform while attempting to deny what Shannon said, which was that he was a fucking fame whore. He just didn't like some of the negative, I guess, feedback, but that hasn't stopped him from becoming a fuller version, I guess, of John. And I was talking about this with friend of the pod, Louis Staples, and I asked Louis if I could quote him on AG, and he said, sure thing, boo, and I appreciate that. But Louis said, I mean, and take this, you know, for in whatever way you would like. Louis said, I would go as far to say that revealing cosmetic procedures publicly like this is abusive behavior. He's trying to publicly humiliate her via a lawsuit, and it almost feels like retribution for it being insinuated that she pays for everything, which I absolutely agree with, that she said on the show that he won't pick up a check. He liked her lifestyle, which included finances. So this is him saying, you say I don't have any money. Well, I would like every last penny back. Continuing Louis' thoughts. Also, it's literally revealing private medical information, which feels extremely unethical, even if it's not a current partner. But to do that to a partner, a man doing it to a woman in a way he knows will embarrass her, breaching the privacy of their relationship, feels very controlling and abusive to me. And you might agree with that. You might not. It's Louis' opinion. But I do think that there is something extraordinarily cringe about this being framed around she owes me money to fix her face. I just think that is so gross and shows every last morsel, not only of who John seems to align with to get the headlines that he certainly believes that he deserves, but to do so in a way that continues to humiliate Shan. If you think this man ever loved her, when he discovered, because I'm sure it was a big shock based on his own behavior, but when he discovered that Shannon, you know, drove into a house, I guess, directly outside of his, you would think that he would care a little bit about making sure that she was okay. And this goes to show you mere months after that, exactly the kind of okay he cares about his former partner, I mean, former love. It shows you exactly how much he cares about Shannon, that he refused to take her money privately because he wanted to humiliate herself on a public stage. He wanted her to feel bad and he wanted the attention, which he thought of as a reward. And people did it for him. Just the way that the headline is phrased is framed is so gross. I just think all of this is so gross. And I also think next season's going to be incredible. I think Shannon will rise from the ashes like a phoenix or whatever bird might have a potential temporary wing injury, but is just continuing to fly along. Archie's going to be there. Maybe Vicky will stop by for lunch. Tamara's probably going to ruin her life. I mean, we've seen it many times before. I think the upcoming season is going to be impeccable. I just also want to say that I think John is obviously in all of the ways that count at 100% fraud. Like, he's just allegedly such a piece of shit. And he shows it to us every day. Like, whatever Shannon said, John is proving as the days go on. He really genuinely is. And if Alexis isn't paying attention or she's paying very close attention and this is just the agreement that they have, ma'am, I just hope for the best. You know, just save those pennies. If you want to bring back Alexis Couture and you think this man is going to pay for a sleeve or whatever because you've decided that those are back, I would be very careful about the way that you two seem to be using each other, because it might be working out now, but that attention is going to turn. And I don't know what the edit for next season is going to look like. I think it's going to be just a fantastic season. I do believe that. I thought last season was great. I actually now want to rewatch last season like immediately, but I do think that this season is going to be one for the books, and we'll see what happens. I mean, we'll see what Tamara's reaction to this is. I'm sure that she has one. I'm sure we're going to get her thoughts, and I'm sure, you know, if she has to, you know, take a 10 when Teddy Joe is talking about Orange County, something tells me that Teddy Joe is going to be able to be a reasonably effective surrogate for Tamara, because that's really what Teddy does best. And we'll see how all of this plays out. I mean, hashtag pray for Shan, hashtag nine lemons in a bowl, hashtag get her a second bowl, hashtag are lemons even in season, do lemons go in season, I don't know how to cook, hashtag, you know, pray for Archie Bador. He has carried a lot of emotional trauma on his furry little back, and I just hope that he is getting the support that they will support each other. That is Shannon's real partner in life, is that sweet, sweet gentleman, Le Petit Prince, Archie, middle name Bador, Archie Storms Bador. I think you know, a storm is brewing, and that's always going to happen when John Jansen is somewhere in the crowd. But I'm hoping for the best. I'm hoping for the best for sweet, sweet Jan. I do have to mention that Victoria Gumbelson, who herself has an interesting history with toxic men, did post on friend of the pod, Christian Grace Snow's post about all of this and says, "This is a joke. Shannon paid for his expensive wardrobe, first class flights, fancy trips and hotels, and he enjoyed the upgrades. Johnny J, you look like a fool. Best thing that Victoria has ever said." Send in the clowns. John Jansen is first in line. I mean, what a mess. Poor, poor sweet Shan. This is unfortunate. They were together for way, way too long. I also got an offer from an Andy Scrolls listener when I posted about this with an array of Shannon Bedore photo reactions on Instagram, who said, "Listen, I know that you haven't watched the COVID season of Orange County, but I would recommend that you reconsider it because it does give a window into Sean and Jan. And since John and Shan, words today. I think this is the glory of having had a brain episode too, is that sometimes when the words come out of my brain, they're mashed potatoes. You know what I'm saying? Like, it sounds good in my head, but my mouth is not as well connected as it was before 2022 when I went outside for a walk. So essentially a kind, polite request for me to rewatch the COVID season. And guys, I'm thinking about it. I don't know. We are unfortunately in the midst of a little bit of a housewives, it's a lighter flow, couple weeks, months, whatever, than what we're used to. So we still have Potomac, and thank God for that, just in terms of whatever the finale is going to give us and that, I'm sure, wonderful reunion arc. But we do still have Potomac to discuss. Then we have New Jersey and then Dubai, which I'm not planning to watch. So I am genuinely thinking about maybe rewatching a season of something and talking about it. And to me, it makes sense. It might be more than one season of something, but it makes sense to maybe watch Orange County. Now, that season of Orange County, I didn't watch in real time at all. Since it aired, I want to say it was recently, like maybe in the last year or so, maybe 2 years ago, I watched the reunion because I just wanted to see, you know, cheater style. I just wanted to see sort of an understanding encapsulation of what happened. And I do not remember a single part of it. I don't know if it was, I think it was two parts. They might have even stretched it to three. Maybe they did it in a 10-minute arc, entirely possible. But so I have technically seen the reunion, but I haven't seen the episodes that preceded it. So I would be very down to rewatch because I actually do think that while that season was 100% a flop, there is stuff to discuss. And since the John Shan dynamics are going to play out on this upcoming season, without her consent seemingly, but also to a certain extent, Welcome to Housewives, production does not give a single fuck. If I began this episode by talking about the ways that Kyle is thought of in terms, and she's also not done what Shannon is. She's a different personality type, which I think benefits her being a beta in the ways that she is. But if you think about the quote unquote power and sway that she has on Beverly Hills, and then you think of poor sweet Shan, poor sweet Shan. It's like production looks at her and says, "What else can we do to make this woman feel bad? How can we set the circumstances up to ensure that she has a Shannon-esque meltdown every third minute of the day?" Well, they're going to get what they're looking for, I think. So we will see how all of that works. But I do think because the Shan, John, and just Shan dynamic is going to be at a focal point, I do think watching that season is important. I also think, I think they might have told me this or someone else did, but like the drinking of it all is a big part of that season. So I do want to give it a watch. And I'm sure I'll have some things to discuss. So let me know your thoughts and feels. If you've seen it, if you think it's worth it, if there's another season that I should be watching in addition to, if not instead, Let me know how you're feeling. And in the meantime, speaking of feeling, I recorded an hour-long Patreon episode with A.G. Meddy, who is a British AG. He is a member of the premium tier of Patreon, the People's Couch. So we recorded an hour-long Patreon episode. It was my favorite episode that I recorded this week, full stop. It was such a delight. He had so many interesting thoughts and feels. We talked at length about Married to Medicine. We talked about his love of, I think it was Beverly Hills in Atlanta, talked about Housewives top fives, Trigger Housewives. Seemingly every franchise was checked off. It was a true round the world in 60 minutes type convo. I really, really loved it. I love connecting with AGs, and to do so long form on a pod was an absolute delight. He took to it like a fish takes to water, like John Jansen takes to a DM to a quote unquote reporter from wherever when he's decided to shame Shan. It's just a really, really fun episode. So it's up now on the AG Patreon. Number one way to support the pod. And I am finally doing another Satchel Spectacular this weekend. I have a lot of your thoughts and feels about all things Kyle Mauricio, Netflix show, other things going on in the Housewives universe. Believe me, surprisingly, there are a couple of things happening. And so I'm excited to deep dive all of that again at the AG Patreon at patreon.com/AndyScrolls. And send me your satchels of gold if you have thoughts and feels about all things Shan, John, Beverly Hills, Vanderpump Rules, The Valley, which I watched last night, watched the premiere, really liked it, was shocked at how much I enjoyed it. Genuinely didn't think that it was going to be as, frankly, interesting as it was. Also, Jax has, I guess, grown a little, but also not at all. So that's kind of fun to watch once again. I'm excited to talk a little bit about that. So let me know your satchels of gold, your thoughts and feels, questions and concerns, named in honor of Her Holiness Kelly Cloran Ben-Simone from, of course, Scary Island. And you can send them to me on Instagram at Dame Galley, or send me a thesis. You know I love an index and just absolutely long form thoughts by emailing andysgirlsshow@gmail.com. Although I'm certainly more responsive over on Instagram when I can. So let me know. Please include your first name and town, and that might be a part of the upcoming Satchel Spectacular. In the meantime, thanks so much for listening to this episode, and I will chat with you soon. Bye-bye.